number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
On the nighttime, the holiday.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, thanks for joining us here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. I am Tony D, taking you through the night tonight on a night where Oklahoma City captures Game 1 of the West in the NBA. A couple of weeks ago, I want to say maybe a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I'm sorry. The conversation was, can Kevin Durant win in Oklahoma City? And if they lose to the Spurs in 4 games or 5 games, will he realize that he's got to go somewhere else, possibly Golden State, in order to get that title? Well, I hope now that Kevin Durant realizes that he can win a title in Oklahoma City. He can win there. He has got a great complimentary player in Russell Westbrook. They've got great role-playing guys. They've got a good coach that's only going to get better. They can win there. I hope Durant stays in Oklahoma City. I hope he does. I don't fault guys for going after more opportunities, more money, whatever it is that they want. I don't begrudge them because Lord knows in my radio career, I've bounced around a million times. And if a guy wants to go somewhere else, try a new place, wants to go for a place for a different opportunity to play with a different players or play for a different coach, I can't begrudge him that. But if he thinks he needs to go somewhere else to win, he doesn't have to go anywhere. This team is capable of winning. They may not win, but I don't think if you're a player, you can be guaranteed anything. I think what you have to do is give yourself the best opportunity, and I think playing for the Thunder now gives them the best opportunity. I don't know if they're going to win this series against Golden State. They may not. But taking game one makes me believe that they can win this series. And you know what? That's all he needs to know. If I'm Kevin Durant, that's all I need to know. Yep, we could beat the best team in the NBA in a 7-game series. And even if they don't, I think the Oklahoma City Thunder, unless they get bombed down in 5 games, unless the Warriors win the next 4 by an average of 15 points, I think the Thunder can leave this series no matter where it's heading, feeling as if they are as good as the best team in the league, and they could beat this team. The possibility is not crazy. Any one of you that calls this show and says that you think the Thunder are going to win this series, I'm not going to throw you off the air and call you insane. I still think the Warriors are going to win this series, but it is not out of the realm of possibility that Oklahoma City emerges as the Western Conference champs. Now, on the flip side, anybody who believes Toronto's got a chance against Cleveland, I am going to wonder if just a couple of screws are loose. I don't see Toronto winning that series at all. I don't even think they make it tough for Cleveland. I think they win a game. Maybe they take 2. But I do not think that the Cleveland Cavaliers are in any danger whatsoever in the East, whereas I think the Warriors are in a little bit of danger in the West. But I still think Golden State wins that series. But my overall point is, if you're Kevin Durant, the idea of analyzing your team and analyzing your organization as championship caliber, I think you can answer that question now. All right, 800-777-2907. We had Andy call in who wanted us to explain the NBA draft lottery process. Now, I think he said process, right? He's not asking who has the best chance of getting the pick.
It's the percentages. Process.
Okay, yeah. It's the process. How the draft lottery is going to occur on Tuesday night. Well, let me tell you how they used to do it in the old days. In the old days, they used to just put the teams in an envelope. They used to have a card, and they used to put that card in an envelope, and they used to put it in a big bin, like a bingo ball bin. They used to spin it. And then David Stern would reach in, and he would plant the envelopes until he got to the final one, whether he's going in reverse order or regular order, until he got all the envelopes out, and then they would open up the envelopes one by one. The problem was is that you could have you could be the 14 team in, actually barely miss the playoffs and end up with the number one seed. So they realized that it needed to be skewed in such a way so that the team with the worst record was not guaranteed the number one pick, but had a better chance of getting the number one pick than a team that may have won 48 games but missed out on the postseason. That's what they were trying to avoid. So they created a new process for the ping pong balls. And this is how it works. The ping pong balls are numbered, and they're numbered from 1 to 14. Okay. Now, four ping pong balls are going to create a four-digit combination, much like the lottery. So you can get a combination of 2, 7, 8, 13, kind of like the pick four, except there's only 14 selections per ball. Now, those numbers, those combinations, there's 1,000 combinations, and those combinations are assigned teams, okay? So 250 of those, for example, are given to the team with the worst record. That gives them a 25% chance of winning the lottery. Team number two gets slightly less than 200 combinations. Team number three, 150 combinations or so. Team number four, 120 combinations or so. Team number five, less than 100, and so on and so on and so on. So that the better record that you have, but yet still in the lottery, you don't get as many ping pong ball combinations to win, to get the number one overall pick. So let's say you're the number one team in. You have 250 combinations. The people in the back room, they start the ping pong air ball process. The balls come up, and they give out the combination. Then they go to a chart, and they say, okay, here's the combination. It doesn't matter what order it's in. If you have 2, 7, 14, 1, it could come up 1, 7, 2, 14. It doesn't matter. Whatever combination that is, they go to the chart, and they go, that number combination belongs to Philadelphia. Now, Philadelphia has the number one pick. The next one, this combination belongs to the Boston Celtics. The Celtics have the number two pick. This combination has the LA Lakers. They have the three pick. So you have a better chance of getting the worst teams in the league to get the number one picks, which is the way the draft is supposed to work. And it was kind of changed. If you remember the 90s, for example, the Orlando Magic got Shaquille O'Neal and Penny Hardaway. And I think the NBA said, gee, we'd really like it if we could erase this and make this a little bit more weak friendly, if you will, to use a better term. All right. The Orlando Magic won, back-to-back lotteries. And that was supposed to be the NBA's version of, all right, we might need to do a little bit different. So that's basically the process. Now, if you've listened to this show a long time, and forgive me if you have and have heard this before, for many years I believed in two and only two sports conspiracies. I never believed that, despite all the free throws that the Lakers shot, that 2002 Western Conference Finals was rigged. I don't believe in any other real manipulative conspiracy theory in sports, but I used to believe in two, and I believed them for a very long period of time. One was Michael Jordan, and I always believed for a long time that David Stern, quote unquote, suspended Jordan, which is why he went to play baseball, for the gambling, and then was kind of allowed to come back. I disbelieved that once I saw the 30 for 30 series on Jordan Rides the Bus. Once you realize the circumstances behind it and the real sincerity of him wanting to play baseball, the fact that the baseball strike made Jordan realize I can't continue baseball because I'm not going to cross the picket line, and I really probably should get back to the NBA. Plus, when you had all these people who said, look, David Stern's no idiot, the best player in the planet, kicking him out of the league is not good for anybody. Yeah, I started going, all right, well, I'm not going to believe in that conspiracy. But this next one, I never shook, and I still believe it to this day. And then I don't know how they did it. Frozen envelope, crease in the envelope, I don't know. But that 1985 draft lottery was rigged to get Patrick Ewing to New York. I will not believe otherwise. I don't care what David Stern says. I don't care what Pat O'Brien says, who was the announcer for the broadcast at the time. I don't care what administratives were there or the people who made sure that it was on the up and up. They're all lying. I don't know how they did it. I always believed the frozen envelope theory. I always thought that was the better one. That seemed easy for Stern to do because his job was to reach in. I think there were 8 envelopes at the time. His job was to reach in, find the one that was much colder than the other envelopes, pull that out, and that's your number one pick, and it was the Knicks. Or people have really broken down the film of the 1985 draft on YouTube, the lottery on YouTube, and some claim that there, when he pulls out the envelope, there's this crease, and it's you could feel the crease with your fingers, and that's why Stern, feeling around for the envelopes, found the crease and picked the Knicks. I don't know how he did it. I don't want to know how he did it, but I know that they did it. That's the only conspiracy theory I buy. It involves the lottery.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. We've talked a lot about the NBA, of course, with Oklahoma City winning. I want to switch gears to an article that I saw today from Stuart Mandel, who is writing. He wrote a really interesting thought piece on college football. And basically looked into the future. And Stuart Mandel, it depends on if you like him or not. Everybody's got some different tastes. And I know that there are people who feel like he's always against their school or he doesn't respect their conference or all that other stuff. That's neither here nor there. The thought of what college football could be like in 10 years was really fascinating to me because I thought about what he thinks 10 years is going to look like in college football. And I had to admit, it's not as radical. It's not off the wall as you may initially think. He predicts that based on the economic model, and we talked about this last week, the economic model of cost of cord cutting and how people are going to be looking for different ways to get their sports without having cable television, that there might be a move in which college football sells you the ultimate college football package. But here's what they do. The Big 12 is looking to expand. The teams that we were talking about for the Big 12 expanding really doesn't move the needle at all. How many of you Big 12 fans out there are excited that Memphis may be coming in or UCF may be coming in? All right, come on, right? You know, it doesn't move the needle. It doesn't make your conference better. It actually might make it worse. Based on these schools, you don't have the same kind of punch. Likewise, super conferences that we keep hearing about all the time, like, well, the SEC's got 14 teams. What if they just merged with some six teams from the ACC and they grab two from the Big Ten and all of a sudden they create this mega conference? So the Pac-12 could be 24 teams deep and make a mega conference. Well, Stuart Mandel believes that there is going to be in 10 years a mega conference, and I found this fascinating. The problem is it's going to leave a lot of people out. So he says that eventually what you're going to have in college football is 24 of the most accomplished and wealthier, talented schools forming a giant mega conference in which every game is going to be a marquee game. And schools like my school, South Carolina, are just going to be left out. And that there's going to be four divisions, a north, south, east, west, midwest, or however they label it. But it's going to be geographic. It includes teams like Penn State, Miami, UCLA, USC, Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Florida State, Michigan, Michigan State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, LSU. You know, the Texas, Oklahoma, the big ones. And he says these are the schools that are going to be playing for a national championship. And only these schools will be playing for a national championship. And he says the reason that he believes this is going to happen, follow me here, the reason he believes this is going to happen is because of what I just mentioned earlier. There's going to be a new way to consume sports. And you will buy a college football package that includes games against these teams and their postseason. And in order to get maximum value for this, you're going to get a schedule that includes this week, Ohio State takes on Auburn, while UCLA battles Texas. Next week, Georgia faces Nebraska, Miami battles Ohio State, and Penn State takes on Florida. And this will be like this every single week, every week for the whole season. And it could cost you $250 for the year. Now, I know the details are a lot. But I find this interesting because think about the way it is now. Can the model of college football last? the way it is now. Do you remember New Year's Eve? Let's go back. New Year's Eve. Do you remember what ESPN had to do to get people to watch the college football playoff games on New Year's Eve? Do you remember that there was a Times Square celebration and they were covering Times Square and at the same time reminding you that while everybody is all gathered to enjoy the festivities of New Year's Eve, don't forget there's college football being played, right? Well, that model is going to start going away. And instead, this kind of stuff is consumed by only people that want it. Not forced down to try to get as many eyeballs to the TV of people who may not even care for it and do want to see Taylor Swift in Times Square performing on New Year's Eve in some sort of pre-celebratory concert. No, no, no. The millions of people that are already in pay premium dollar. They get it. They get it on all their devices. They get it however they want to consume it. And they will get quality football matchups every single week. Why? Because the money would be astronomical. He estimates that if 11 million people pay $250 a piece for this type of package, then the cut of each of all the 24 schools, the cut that they would receive would be $114 million in media revenue. That is three times what Big Ten schools are getting on their deal right now. Do not think for a second that college football is not thinking about this sort of big model. The problem is, what do you do with a school like mine, South Carolina? Am I interested in college football if South Carolina's only goal every single year is to go to the Outback Bowl? Would I be interested in a season in which South Carolina's only goal, no, only goal, not, hey, we may have a quarterback recruit that's awesome, or we may have a running back that might change the game of our program like Marcus Lattimore did, if the only thing South Carolina can compete for is an Outback Bowl or Citrus Bowl or maybe a Chick-fil-A Bowl, something along those lines? Would I be all in? Would I be in? And some people may say, you know what? Maybe doesn't matter. Who cares? We've got 24 of the biggest rabid fan bases. We need 11 million, 10 million people, and we know we can get it with these 24. My God, Alabama alone, Texas alone, Michigan alone. It's interesting. 10 years, he thinks, that something like this, well, he doesn't predict it that it will be exactly like this. But we're going to do away with the college football playoff committee. I don't know if that's a good idea or not. I actually don't like the idea of determining the postseason with a bunch of guys in a room voting. But I certainly don't want a chaotic college football postseason, everybody's involved, some sort of massive tournament thing either. So I accept guys sitting in a room, guys and gals sitting in a room discussing college football and coming up with the top four teams. I do it because I don't want a 16-team playoff or a 32-team playoff, something ridiculous like that. Just something to think about. If you are a fan of one of the lesser teams, you may be regulated to second-tier status in a new world order of college football. Because we know that most of these conferences are driven by football. The Big East was one of the best basketball conferences we'd ever seen, and it was dismantled because football had to get involved. Football is where it's at. Even if the basketball is fantastic, you have to have football. And you have to have football because the money in that sport alone is enough to make your athletic budget. Can you imagine $115 million for a school like Alabama every single year and the recruiting advantage it has over everybody else in the SEC? The SEC would have to go away. It would be insignificant. Same with the Big Ten, same with the Big 12, same with the Pac-12, because this new mega conference. It's rather a fascinating read. Check it out. I'm Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio. And yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight as we continue to look at the NBA playoffs. And Yeah, it was fun in the Western Conference for Game 1 as Oklahoma City beat Golden State. But what about the East, as Cleveland has been waiting since May 9th to get their meeting with the Toronto Raptors, who took care of the Miami Heat in seven games. And we'll talk about the Cleveland Cavaliers with Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com. How are you, Chris?
I'm doing great, Tony. How are you, man?
Good, man. Appreciate your time. All right, tell me what you expect in the series with the Raptors. They're certainly not the Hawks or the Pistons. What do you expect Toronto to bring to this series against the Cavaliers?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they're not the Hawks. They're not the Pistons. I think you have to show respect to the Raptors. I think the Cavs have shown respect to the Raptors. They won 56 games in the regular season. They're the number two seed in the Eastern Conference. Won a pair of game sevens just to get to this point in the conference finals. So there's some respect from the Cavs side, especially when you've got two all-stars in Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. But when it comes to the Raptors, I mean, that's been where it has stopped for them, especially going into the series against the Cavs, with the Raptors not knowing the status of big man Jonas Valanciunas, who is the third leading scorer for Toronto so far in the postseason. So it is a step up in competition, but I think the Cavs are equipped to handle a game plan, devise a game plan defensively for a team that's led by two stars and doesn't have a bunch else around them. It's going to take much more than just Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan to beat a team like the Cavs, who are deeper, more balanced, and their big three is playing as good as they've played since they've come together.
In terms of the way Cleveland is playing, everybody was waiting for the time where you turn it on in the postseason. What has been working for Cleveland in the playoffs that has developed during the regular season? May not always have been there, but has developed during the regular season.
Well, they started playing pretty well down the stretch, I thought, in the second half of the season and towards the end of the regular season. They started to share the ball, and I think that's a huge thing for the Cavs, especially offensively, Tony. Because at the beginning of the season, there was a lot of my turn, your turn thing. The big three still trying to figure out how they could best play together all at the same time. And it seems like they're starting to figure it out. They're running plays where all three are involved, putting a ton of pressure on the opposing defense. And that's what it comes down to when you play against the Cavs. It comes down to a very, very difficult decision. You have LeBron James. You have Kyrie Irving, you have Kevin Love. So if two of those guys are involved in the play, or three of them are involved in the play, you have to make a choice. Are you going to collapse the paint and try and take away the driving lanes from LeBron and Kyrie? Are you going to double-team Kevin Love in the post? If you do both of those things, or two of those things, you're going to free up outside shots. And the Cavs have surrounded LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin with capable outside shooters, and they're making 16 threes a game so far in the first eight games of the postseason. So every single series against the Cavs, when you're talking about seven games honing in on one specific opponent, the Cavs have so many different answers.
Give me an idea of LeBron from the way he's developed as a player from the time, you know, he came to Cleveland, even in his time in Miami, when he realized I've got to get other people involved. How much does he want the teammates around him to have just as big of a game as he does?
Very much so, Tony. And it's the thing that I think separates LeBron from everybody else in the NBA still. And it's the thing that Toronto believes has separated LeBron from everybody else. It's the fact that he makes an imprint on every single possession of every single game. So if he's not shooting very well offensively, or if he's not looking to attack the basket offensively, he's still a threat to do other things. And Dwayne Casey said earlier today on a conference call, the thing that they're most concerned about when it comes to LeBron is the thing that he wants to do most. And it's surprising to think about this, but what LeBron wants to do most is get his teammates involved. He wants to pass the ball. He wants to create easy opportunities for his teammates, because sometimes the other guys on this roster, Tony, they have a hard time creating their own shot or getting good looks at the basket just because of who they are and the skill set that they have. So LeBron is still the number one creator for the Cleveland Cavaliers,
Christopher Dorr joins us. Cleveland.com on the Cavaliers as they get ready for their Eastern Conference Finals against Toronto. Chris, defensively, and we talk about what LeBron does offensively, defensively, how versatile is he in terms of, hey, he can guard guards, he can guard forwards, in terms of what he can bring defensively, what is it like to watch LeBron on that end of the ball?
It's incredible. It's very, very similar, I think, Tony, to Draymond Green from Golden State. And look, Draymond got some recognition for Defensive Player of the Year, and he plays hard on every single possession, and he can play all of those different positions that you mentioned of LeBron. And he was more consistent defensively than LeBron this year. I'll admit that. But LeBron has the skill set, LeBron has the body, LeBron has the build to be that kind of guy for the Cavs. And I think that's one of the reasons why the Cavs can match up and play any single style that anybody wants. Draymond Green is a huge key to Golden State's death lineup, their small ball lineup, because of Draymond's ability to play the five and because of Golden State's ability to switch everything. The Cavs feel like they can play that same kind of style because of LeBron, because he can play center for stretches, because he can play power forward for stretches, because he can switch on to point guards, and he can harass them just the same way that he can harass guys at his position. So as much as people do talk about LeBron and the burden that he carries for the Cavs offensively being the number one creator, Tony, I think you hit on it. He's a huge linchpin of their defense. Him and Tristan Thompson have been guys at the back end of the defense that are the vocal leaders of that unit, and they're the guys that are responsible for the Cavs being able to try and switch everything and try and slow down some of these pick-and-roll attacks that a lot of teams have thrown at them so far in the postseason. And they're going to be vitally important in this series against Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and everybody else that the Raptors try and throw out there.
Chris, I want to get your thoughts on some stuff that comes out of his mouth sometimes. I love reading LeBron quotes because sometimes they're cryptic and sometimes there's stuff that we kind of like read between the lines. When he says things about valuable player, or he says things about his team, and he says things about the NBA in general, does it bother him that there was so much attention on Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors? Does that bother him not just on a I want to be the best player thing, but just more on a yeah, I want a little bit more attention for what we're doing.
So I think this is really complex, Tony, because LeBron is a very complex guy. To answer your question, I do think the attention that Golden State has gotten, the fact that they are the favorite, the fact that everybody is talking about them, the fact that people have started to wonder whether Stephen Curry has passed LeBron as the best player in the NBA, I do think that bothers him. Absolutely. Whether he's ever going to come out and say it or not, that remains to be seen. But LeBron loves to be the center of attention. LeBron loves the spotlight shining on him. LeBron loves to be loved. And he has accomplished so much throughout his career that I think he thinks, and he's probably right about this, he belongs still at the top of the NBA until something drastic changes or until LeBron takes a step back. And LeBron hasn't taken a step back. He hasn't at all. He's still playing at an MVP level. And I think when you think about the comments that he made recently, Tony, about the whole focusing on the valuable aspect of MVP, he understands that there is a perception that Steph has passed him as the best player in the NBA. And he knows that he's not going to be able to knock down a record number of three-pointers. And LeBron knows that he's not going to be able to go out there and lead the NBA in scoring. So he focuses and continues to remind people to focus on the valuable thing. You know why, Tony? Because that's his best chance of winning another MVP, yeah. Is that people start to think, hey, wait a minute, maybe I should reevaluate how I vote for this specific award. And I think he continues to want to let people know, hey, start thinking about it in terms of what a guy does on every single play of every single game. Not necessarily the most flashy guy, not necessarily the guy that shows up in highlights, but value. Focus on the value thing, because that's LeBron's best asset, as we talked about.
Christopher Dorr again, Cleveland.com on the Cavaliers. Always great stuff when you're on, my friend. Thank you so much.
Tony, you got it, man. Anytime.
All right, coming up next, the bad luck Buffalo Bills Yikes. And a former Russell Wilson teammate had a lot of negative things to say about what Russell Wilson said. That's all next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Telephone number 800-777-2907. You want to talk about the Western Conference Finals? Also, the conversation we had with Chris Fedor on the Cleveland Cavaliers, and especially LeBron. He's got that team ready to go. I really hope he does win a title in Cleveland because I admire the pursuit. I know the city has been hurting for a title. I would love to see them get one. I'd love to see him accomplish it. Especially making up for the decision and all that. I think it would be an interesting career arc that we would talk about for many, many years. Not only is one of the best players in the NBA, but also just his story and hometown and leaving his hometown and then coming back and trying to give a city a title. If he gets it, it makes a very, very interesting story. You know what else makes a very interesting story? Former teammates feuding on Facebook. Russell Wilson delivered his speech at the commencement ceremony at the University of Wisconsin, where he went to school after his time at NC State. He was at NC State and then went to Wisconsin, now off to the NFL. And during the speech, Russell Wilson claimed that head coach of the Wolfpack, Tom O'Brien, told him that he needed to give up his NFL dreams. And then he also told him that he would not be welcome back to the team. Wilson makes this speech, and of course, if you were a teammate of Russell Wilson's and you think there was something different, you have an opportunity to go out and tell everybody that. And that's exactly what Kalani Hepe did from the I hope I'm getting that name right. I don't know who he is, but he apparently worked for or played for the Wolfpack while Wilson was there. And listen to what he wrote on his Facebook page. I think it's pretty well known how much I despise Tom O'Brien on a molecular level. However, getting rid of Russell Wilson is the one admirable thing he did during his tenure at State. 80% of the beep that Russell said in his speech didn't even happen. It was really hard for Russell to field punts and play safety when his head was firmly lodged up all of the offensive coaches beep on a daily basis. Russell was a great player, but he was a me player, unable to put the team before himself and his illustrious baseball career at State. Beep Russell, us real State people still have Philip Rivers to claim as our own. Wow! That's great! That's great. Now, again, this is he said, he said. Russell Wilson is going to say he said the truth. He claims the truth as he sees it. Teammates are going to claim the truth as they see it. And so you always have to take that with a grain of salt. But I like the boldness here of somebody going, all right, that's enough, Russell. That's enough. Listen, I don't like my coach. I despise him, but you're actively lying about him. And I want people to know what you were really like while you were at NC State. All right. That works. That's pretty cool. That's a little rough, though. It's really rough. He couldn't field punts, and he was working on his illustrious baseball career. Remember that? He was still trying to pursue that. And it was like he was with the Texas Rangers. Remember he was going out for a tryout, and people were like, enough, man. Stop. That was sold. Deion Sanders did that. Bo Jackson did that. Now you got to play baseball. Cut it out. Stop doing everything.
He's probably going to be one of those guys that will stay in football till he's about 31 and then just be like, you know what, guys, I'm going to retire and I'm going to go play baseball and just think he can just step into the major leagues and play.
I watched a real sports segment on him that was done by Brian. It was the weirdest, strangest thing. Brian Gumbel was trying to get him to commit to something. So he said, like, if you're at a wedding and you have a choice between steak or fish, what would you choose? He goes, I like both. He said that with everything. And it basically because he came down to football and baseball. Football, you're making millions of dollars. You're a star. You're a Super Bowl champion. Yeah, but I like play both. What do you mean you like to play both? One pays you a boatload of money. One requires you to be dedicated because you're playing one of the toughest positions in all of sports. You are a Super Bowl champion. You're on a team that can win multiple Super Bowl championships. This was before they lost to the Patriots. And Brian Gumbel was just basically trying to get him to admit, you know, football is my first love. And he couldn't do it. He wouldn't do it, which was amazing to me. But, you know, that's him. He's like that. I remember when he bought his house. I think we talked about it on the show. He bought his house near Bill Gates's home in Washington. And I remember thinking, wait a minute, you're in the same neighborhood as Bill Gates? Does Bill Gates even have a neighborhood? Because if I had Bill Gates money, there would be no neighborhood. I'm not in a neighborhood.
I'm a town.
That's exactly right. You wouldn't be able to say I have a house near Tony D if I was worth $57 billion. Right. I would say, yes, you have a house near me, like the moon has a house near Earth.
Right.
That's basically what you're telling your friends. Oh no, I live near Tony D like I live near Saudi Arabia. That's basically where it would come from. There would be no neighbor. No. We're not having yard sales. You're not going to give me a flyer to be community involved. No. If I was worth $57 billion, you're right. I would have my own department stores, my own fast food restaurants,
yeah, exactly.
My own movie theater staffed by people who sit around and wait for me to want to use it. That would be it. I would have a movie theater staffed with kids sitting around staring at a popcorn machine, and I may go down to see a movie, and I may not go down to see a movie.
I may not.
You
see
would
one
know the checks clear.
Yep.
The same way. I may bring 30 of my friends. I may bring nobody. But there's no way anybody's living within a proximity of me that makes me believe that they could be my neighbor. And Russell Wilson's got good money, but him living near Bill Gates is like me living near Russell Wilson, all right? If not worse. I love this guy. I really do. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.